Welcome to the Studio Sherpas Podcast, episode 41.
Broadcasting from a top secret edit suite high in the Himalayas, you're listening to Studio Sherpas. The climb is on. Take your creative business to the next level. From freelance to freedom, here they are, the Studio Sherpas, Matt Davis and Ryan Coral.
Those stupid photographers. Oh, those stupid videographers or filmmakers or cinematographers or whatever they call themselves. This is an episode today that I was looking forward to. It's the main event. Photography versus videography. Battle of photographers versus videographers and vying for position and pride and whatever we deal with in this industry. We have all been there. Photographers have their gripes. Videographers have their gripes. But today, we're not going to be griping. We're going to be talking about how to actually fix the scenario that a lot of us find ourselves in. Matt here, Co-Sherpa. I do weddings myself. We focus on corporate video work, but my wedding brand, we have come across some amazing photographers, and we've come across some photographers that have let their egos get in the way. And I know that videographers and filmmakers have egos as well that can potentially ruin a day for a client. And so today I have a guest with me, Sachin Kona. He is based out of Vancouver and some incredible work going on in his studio. He's also a street photographer, and we're going to talk about that, what that means and how he sells his art and gets it out to the world. But he started in a corporate job, you know, in the confines of a cubicle, and he realized he wasn't coming alive with what he was doing. And so we start, you know, talking about how he transitioned into the driver's seat that he needed to be in, his role that he needed to fulfill his creative drive and his purpose and what he wanted to provide and create for the world. Then we dive into, you know, the issue that we have is, you know, vying for time and position and angles and working together as a team as photographers and videographers. It's going to be a fun episode. We did have a rule, though. We wanted it to be a positive conversation. And so as you listen, we hope we provide some insight on how we can communicate better, no matter which side you're on, whether you're a photographer or a filmmaker. We talk about some tips to ensure the wedding day goes smoothly when working with other creatives. And that might mean other people outside of photography and videography. How to set the tone. We talk about, you know, setting the tone for the rest of the day, the wedding day, right off the bat, and why this is essential. And if you're not reaching out and extending a nice hello or a game plan, you need to listen in on this episode. We also talk about why you need to educate the client on your schedule and your style and what it takes to achieve it. And, you know, knowing is half the battle, and communicating with your client is just as important as communicating with the filmmaker or the photographer. So we have some fun with this. Sachin is an awesome guy, very down to earth, honest. And we dive into some things that maybe you guys have wanted to talk about, but you always have been afraid to. I'm sure you guys have people in your market, in your network, and in your industry. Situations that you put yourself in can be alleviated if we just talk about how to communicate better and work together as a team. Without further ado, let's start the conversation with Sachin. Ladies and gents, today we have an amazing photographer, and I know that's not normal. We are definitely filmmakers on this usually, but we wanted to bring someone in that can speak some truth into the other side of what we do for weddings and corporate work. But we've got Sachin Kona here, all the way from Vancouver. Thanks for being with us today, brother. How are you?
I'm doing great, Matt. How are you?
Doing awesome, man. This is the first time we've had a photographer on the podcast, so no pressure there. thank you for doing this. I know you were connected with some of our other creative friends and you were referred to us. And so I don't take that lightly. So let's just get a little background information from you. You've got a killer accent, so we can start there. Where are you from? What do you do? And just tell us a little bit about your business.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm from London, England originally. I now live in Vancouver, BC. Born and raised in the UK. I'm a wedding and portrait photographer, very passionate about street photography. And I also run a conference for creatives in Vancouver.
Awesome. What does street photography mean for those that, you know, does that mean your iPhone camera, you taking your actual professional gear out, you're just filming people that, like, what does that mean?
Oh, yeah, sure. So street photography, I guess, yeah, you're right. It has many definitions. For me, it's basically documenting things as I see it on the street, unobtrusively. And yeah, I use my normal gear. I shoot weddings, D750s, and I use a D750 on the street as well. I'm definitely not shy about having a larger body. I have recently transitioned to a Fuji X-T2, which I absolutely love. But yeah, I love street photography, and it's definitely influenced my wedding photography and my approach.
Well, we are tolerant of all different types of people, but we do not tolerate Nikon. So this conversation is over. We have to end the podcast. I'm so sorry.
I used to shoot Canon for many, many years, and I actually do still bring Canon body with me to weddings as well. So kind of hopefully that will squeeze me back into to this talk.
Yeah, we are Canon people, but we actually, full disclosure too, I should put my money where my mouth is. We sold all of our Canon gear this season, and we switched all to Sony. But that's another conversation. What made you move all the way across the world to Vancouver?
Basically, it was a lifestyle choice, I guess. I love being surrounded by nature, and the mountains and the ocean was a huge draw for me. I'm a huge traveler, and I met some Canadians from Calgary in 2006 when I was living and working in Australia, in Sydney. Yeah. And we became good friends. And at the time, I was studying, after Australia, I studied finance, or I worked. I had a finance job. I became a chartered accountant, and a very miserable one, mind you. But I basically, came to visit them in Calgary, and we drove through Alberta and BC and ended up in Vancouver, and then went to the island. And I just kind of fell in love with the country and the people and just how beautiful everything was, and the ease of access to nature, really, with a really bustling city as well. So that was my main reason, really, for moving to Vancouver.
I mean, you took a risk there. That's really cool. I mean, a lot of people are afraid to do something like that. Yeah, it's good.
Totally. I guess at the time, though, as I mentioned, I was an accountant. I was working in finance, doing audit, and I was really unhappy in that role. So, I thought, okay, this is my life. This is what it's going to be. But my 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, is going to be this. But the rest of my life can be awesome. And having the beach and mountains and trails and hikes, like, in easy access was a huge draw. So I actually moved here to become, I guess, an accountant living in an amazing city. And then things quickly changed, I guess, after that. But that's probably a bit of a longer story, but happy to go into that if you want.
I want to hear, so you're mentioning something that I think a lot of us in this industry, and I say this industry in terms of whether you're a filmmaker or a photographer, we all struggle with the same things, the creative drive, the business side of things as well. Like, you flew across the world to become an accountant somewhere else. A lot of us still are afraid to make the leap and jump and say, you know what? I hate my job. Like, this is not what I'm supposed to be doing. I don't want to be in this cubicle. Like, I'm not supposed to be doing this. At what point did you start saying, like, I can't do this. I can't do this for the rest of my life. Like, I got to change. Something's got to change. Like, what does that look like? Because a lot of people are still sitting in that chair, if that makes sense.
Sure. I really struggled a lot with that role. From like literally 6 to 8 weeks into it, I just knew it wasn't for me. And I actually really wanted to leave and not have to study and get this qualification. And it didn't sit with me well at all. And then I persisted and, spoke to family and friends, and I just landed, like, what, inverted commas, I guess, was like the perfect job at, one of the best companies in the world. And to just give that up straight away would have been a mistake. And I'm so glad I didn't. But I always knew this wasn't for me, but it could lead to other things. I just didn't know what. So I thought, let me just stick with it, see if I can do it. And it was literally the summer after that first year when I came to Canada, and then I saw Vancouver and knew that this is where I'm going to live, like, and where I need to be. So that was a huge drive and motivation to continue. Otherwise, that trip really was also for me to just see whether I wanted to do another 2 years of this thing that I just hated so much.
Were you doing photography at the same time? Like, I mean, you'd always practiced photography, so there was kind of a pull. You're kind of being torn.
For sure, yeah. I've always been a traveler. I've always loved street photography, as I mentioned. And in this job, I would take, we're really lucky in the UK. You get like 5 weeks holiday. We could buy a week. So every 3 months, I would take a week off, and in the summer, take more weeks off. So I always had that to look forward to. And I would take my camera and just shoot things and explore. So yeah, photography was a big part of my life, but I hadn't even considered being a wedding photographer at that point. That came a bit later.
Okay. Well, then how did you transition? Like, what was the process that you had in your head and that you put into place from getting out of this prison, basically, that you didn't want to be in? And how did you transition out of that to do what you really felt you needed to do? Because there might be people listening right now that are still working in 9 to 5, and then they're on the weekends doing whatever it is they really love to do, and they have to go back and they're wearing themselves out. There's a season, I think, of life that you have to do that. But how did you do it? Like, there's always different ways to do it. How did you get out of what you were doing and follow your dream?
Sure. I kind of, you know, I would shoot on weekends. I actually went to India to shoot or to be a guest at a friend's wedding, and then took a lot of photos, just fell in love with that and realized that, oh, this is something that I could maybe do. And so I spent 2 years basically assisting other photographers, learning. I hadn't even really been to many weddings at that point. I definitely hadn't been to the sort of weddings that I now shoot. And so I just kind of took my time, really. I didn't think that, you know, I wasn't just going to jump ship straight away. I wanted to set myself up, have good savings, and then go for it. But around this time was, you know, 2008, 2009, the banks all kind of crashed in September of 2008. I'd already handed in my resignation at my job. I knew I was coming to Canada for a year to just try it out. And so I kind of like bounced around these admin jobs, but I knew that, okay, look, I'm not going to get a really decent finance job for a while. So let me just pursue this photography thing. So I was kind of given this opportunity at the same time. And and I guess to anyone who's kind of like in that position whereby they don't really know, you know, how to leave that current job or whatever, I mean, I'm definitely less of a risk taker in certain ways, but just kind of follow your instincts, keep building up your portfolio, keep experiencing different elements of photography that you really love, and just keep grinding away at it. It's definitely not a race. It should feel right. And when it does, then you'll know to kind of go for it. And that's what I did. I kind of saved up enough money that I knew I could live for the rest of the year, just kind of doing weddings and seeing how it went. So that first summer, when after 2 years of assisting other people, I built up a portfolio, people started to inquire. I had about 6 or 7 weddings, I think, that summer. And I just kind of went all out. I tried to learn like as much as I could from others and, you know, did workshops and things like that. And then when that season ended, I started to get inquiries for the next year. And that allowed me to live for the next few months, et cetera, et cetera. And it just kept building and building and building. And then, and literally since that summer, I've never had to go back. It's just been, I've just kept grinding and kept getting more work, really.
And now you're doing weddings and you're traveling, and it takes a little bit to build it up. But tell us a little bit more now. So let's fast forward. How many events do you do a year? And you mentioned, to me at least, you do focus on weddings and street photography and portrait photography. Is there any other areas that you get called on to do any kind of random projects or anything like that?
Every now and again, I get the odd event or a corporate gig and stuff like that. And I'll do it if it's new and I've never done it before, just to try it the once and to also experience different things. I'm definitely experienced over, you know, it doesn't always necessarily have to be monetary, but predominantly I shoot weddings. I do between 15 to 20 a year. I think a couple of years ago, I did 28 at my max. That's the highest it's ever been. And I think 20 to 25 is kind of like my sweet spot. But as I mentioned, now I run a conference and I'm actually trying to scale that down so that I can focus more on community and education and whilst being able to shoot weddings and do street photography, which I love doing so much as well.
So your threshold's 20, mid 20s. You do everything yourself? You edit everything yourself? And do you have any teams or anything?
I pretty much do everything myself. Recently, I've started to outsource some weddings, but all I outsource really is the white balance, kind of the color correction, exposure, straightening, etc. So they get about 70% of the way there, and then I feel like the finesse and the final touch is always going to come from the creative who took the image. I don't think anyone can really replicate exactly what you want to do, but or at least I haven't found it yet. If anyone knows of somewhere that can do anything, I don't mind doing that bit. That's the bit that I love, and I want to make sure that everything looks and feels right. So I spend about 2 or 3 hours reviewing that, and then it's done, really. And then I export and move on from there. So pretty much everything is me in terms of weddings, except for some post.
Have you ever tried video?
Yeah, I have actually a little bit. I do enjoy it. I have like Super 8 cameras at home, which I've yet to actually use. But I'm definitely interested in video, and I definitely see a future in it, whether or not it, I don't think I would ever charge to do anything, but I would like to definitely just create and play with video. I think it's awesome.
Well, I am terrible. You know, we use the same gear, man, but I am terrible at taking a photo. I just can't do it. Now, I feel like I'm a pretty good filmmaker, but I just, nothing translates to me. So it's a different skill set. So I commend you for having, I mean, I feel like I can do a good job on my iPhone, but I pick up the same camera that I'm using for my work and I switch it to photos and manual. And I'm like, why does it look like this? And so anyway, I feel like I always love to ask that because maybe I'm crazy. Maybe, of course, I understand what the camera can do and how to manipulate the image. But we use Super 8 as well. So we actually do that for weddings and we're one of the only ones around here that does it. But man, I love that you said that. Take them off the shelf. Get the dust off and go out there and get some street Super 8, man.
Yeah, mate, I would love to. I just have this fear of shooting through a roll and then it not being good at all. And it's going to cost me an arm and a leg. So yeah, once I get the proper education and the courage to use it, I definitely will. But yeah, someday, who knows? I'm just glad I have them because I know that I have the access to them and I can and I will one day use them. So that keeps me pretty happy.
I wanted to have you on, and there's a few more questions about, you know, making the leap of faith is a great, I mean, you took a leap of faith and you did what you wanted to do and you're doing it, but we wanted to have someone on like you that can kind of speak some truth and have some dialogue and conversation on how to work better as a team at weddings or whatever event or project you're working on with the photographer. Yeah. And so I wanted to see like, what's been your experience? And then, you know, you can drop some F-bombs. We'll bleep them out. I'm kidding. What's been your experience as a whole with event filmmakers and videographers in regards to working well together? Do you find that there's egos involved of the majority of the people? Because you're doing some high-end weddings. I mean, are you finding the majority of the people are nice to work with? Or are you still finding some frustrations that maybe you did when you first started out?
Yeah, sure. It's probably a mixture of both, actually. What I do now myself is just try and, you know, if they have video, who's the videographer? Have I worked with them before? What's their kind of like experience level? I try and reach out and connect with them so that we each know what each other's style is so that we can do the best essentially for the couple. But it starts even earlier than that as well. I, you know, when I meet couples, I ask them about the photography and their tastes and, you know, what do they like about my work? And then, you know, videos sometimes or usually does come up. And then I kind of want to know, you know, if they've already booked a videographer or they're looking into, like, who are they looking into? What are their tastes and what style are they going with? Because, it's so important for us to collaborate together so that we can create something that's, like, really beautiful and doesn't compromise our own styles and art of what we're trying to achieve, really.
Do you feel that in the selling process, when you're speaking to your client, to your bride and groom, do you feel that it's a fine line between, like, saying, hey, and I've never done this, and I'm just curious as if anyone else has done this, but like if you hear of them choosing a videographer that you know is not the same style as you, you know, that can be a deal breaker for some. Or do you kind of see the silver lining and say, okay, well, this is going to be a challenge. Let's see what we can do about this. Do you bring this stuff up in the sales process?
Yeah, I know you said like in the sales process and stuff. I guess like what I'm trying to do when I first meet a couple is, yeah, for sure. I don't really want to try too hard to like sell what I do. Hopefully they've seen my work and they enjoy it. It's really about us connecting at this stage and do our personalities and our vibe and energies match, really, because then I know I can create for them what at least I show on my website. I'm definitely not trying to convince them at that stage to like me as a photographer, but at the same time, obviously I do want them to if we do get along really well. But yeah, if they mention videographers who aren't my style, then I guess, it hasn't, in recent memory, I don't think that has actually come up. But if it did, then I would just dig a bit more into like, you know, what do they like about the style? What have they seen? Because I definitely know videographers who have a certain style that is a bit more kind of, ask the couple to do certain things that don't necessarily fit in with my style. Like my style is very unobtrusive and documentary, like very hands-off and let the day flow as it would unobtrusively, and I try not to get involved too much. Whereas some videographers, you know, they need a certain segment of their movie to look a certain way, and that's what they promise and show them. So they need the couple to act a certain bit out. So yeah, I guess I would just ask a bit more about what is it that they like about them, and then just see if that is what they're actually looking for. Then maybe we're not the best fit, really.
Yeah.
then I would recommend them photographers that I know definitely do get along well with those videographers and also have that style. And then it's not a problem. It's like, it is what it is. It's, I want them to obviously pick the photographers that they resonate well with. And I'm sure, yeah, it'll work out better for everyone, really.
I feel like the more established you become as a creative, you're going to find that couples gravitate towards the same styles of people and companies. I do feel that, you know, we end up, the majority of the weddings that we work during the year, we have the same quality and style, and we have the same photographers that believe the same things we do. Now, that doesn't mean we necessarily know them, but we can see in their work, okay, they have the same style as us. But that doesn't mean egos don't get in the way. Sometimes when you show up, I mean, I want to hear from your perspective, and then we're going to go into some things that maybe you can help other filmmakers know how to collaborate better. Sometimes people don't put the clients first, right? I'm sure you've experienced that. It's like trying to see who can be the best. Have you run into that? And what are like three or four things we can do to nip things in the bud on a wedding day as a team that would help the clients?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I guess I definitely have seen that where maybe a videographer's taken like a lot of control and has definitely like played out. It's definitely more in the getting ready part of the day, which yeah. is unfortunate because it's the start of the day and that sets the tone for the rest of the day, you know? And I think, yeah, in terms of things that we could do beforehand is to, yeah, just connect, reach out with each other. Just, this is if you haven't worked together before, obviously, but just get to know each other as, you know, creatives. What are we each looking for? What are they hoping to maybe achieve from like the day and share maybe videos of past work that they've done or check out the photographer's work as well. All of this, obviously, it does take time and effort, but I don't think it has to take up a lot of time. But if you go through that process, then at least you know who you're working with. And then things that I found to be really beneficial for me is, especially in the morning, if they're getting ready, and as I mentioned, I'm documentary and unobtrusive, so I would just say, hey guys, can we just let them do things as they naturally would? Let's obviously pick the best light, but then, you know, have it happen as naturally as possible. And then if you need them to like reenact anything or you need to like get closer to, you know, the groom putting on his bow tie, for example, or something, let's save that like for the end. But at least for this first part, I don't need to be there for that, you know, when they need to redo like a certain scene and stuff. But the most beneficial thing for me is working together for the portraits and giving each other like space and time to just do our own thing during that time. Because I feel like depending on the videographer, the portrait time is what can take up a larger part maybe of the video and snippets depending on how it's run. And so I'm more creative when I just know that I have more time and space with the couple. I don't need to like shift gears every few minutes so that the videographer can do their thing. I think if we just have, we could do half an hour of that. And then if we have like 15 minutes just alone to just do our own things, I think that's really great.
Yeah. I think a lot of what you're saying, and again, I'm coming from the other side of things. We feel those frustrations too as filmmakers. Cool. I think it starts with communication. You're right. And even calling, you would be surprised. We have always called and communicated with the photographer, even if we've worked with them before the wedding day and said, hey, you know what? We're working together again. But especially if we haven't, we're calling them up and we're saying hi. And we rarely get calls back. And when we do, it's like, whoa, like, what are you, you're calling me? Like, this is awesome. And so I'm preaching to filmmakers, like have some communication. But I also think, and I want you to keep going here because this is good. Whether you're a photographer or a filmmaker, you got to start with educating the client before they even book you. Like, what is it that you do? If you don't set things up, like let them know on your website or in emails that come after they've signed up to inquire with you and have a sit down consultation with you. Start there and say, hey, this is what we are and this is what we are not. And photographers should do the same thing. It shouldn't just be about the work. You should say, here's what we do. This is our style. This is what we like, put it into words so they can say, oh, okay, cool. Because we can't help it. We're not the type of company that would say, nope, we're not working with you if you got this photographer. We've never done that. However, there is a photographer in my town that we just know, geez, he's going to bring all of his light stands. He's going to have this strobe going off. You got this light stick coming around, sweeping around. It looks like there's planets sweeping around during the first dance. We just know. But as creatives and as professionals, you just have to adapt and it is what it is. And sometimes it's like, all right, how can we be more creative this wedding? We know that this person's going to be here. what can we do differently to still do our job and not hurt anybody's feelings and, you know, all that stuff. So
yeah, definitely educating the couple about what you're about and what, you know, and the videographers, filmmakers, what they're about. And then, yeah, connecting so that you can collaborate and create together so that you're not, you know, conflicting at all and or compromising in any way on the day. But yeah, I'm finding that more and more with my couples. They definitely are picking, you know, filmmakers and videographers that match, yeah, what they're looking for and my style, really, because they are looking for someone who's unobtrusive and documentary, and they want to just enjoy their day and have it filmed as is. So they're the sort of filmmakers that I end up referring a lot of. And when I get to work with them, it's great, because I just, you know, sometimes I don't even notice them. It's so funny. Whereas there's other filmmakers I've worked with that you definitely notice them throughout the whole day, and it can be challenging.
Yeah. And you know what? Some people want that, and I don't know why, but and that's totally fine. If you're that type of photographer or filmmaker that does pose all day, that does create art in the sense that you're stopping them and doing everything. If that's what the client wants, then do what the client wants. However, you're going to find that you're going to have frustrations, and those things could have, I feel like they could be avoided if you educate the clients just beforehand, like, hey, just know, like, we can work with any photographer, but just know you're going to see some things in the video that we just can't help. And as long as you're cool with that, great. Just having that open communication. And I don't know what it's like as a photographer to do that same thing, but you have to go with the flow. Weddings, you can't dictate anything, because we tell our couples, like, we don't want to make a production out of your wedding day. So I know there's times where if you and I were working together, I might swoop in and get one shot, but then I'll swoop back out, because I know that you need a shot, but you're not filming every single second. You're getting little moments. And so it's the people that don't understand that. I think we get a lot of frustrations in our industry of like, oh, photographers, oh, videographers, but there's a hopeful way. There's a way to be productive about it, I think. And that's what this conversation's about. This is not photography bashing or filmmaker bashing. And that's why I asked you, I didn't know, and I totally interrupted you. Are there any other things that you think we could do to nip things in the bud that maybe photographers appreciate and that would be appreciative to filmmakers too, that you could do to be proactive on a wedding day?
Yeah, I think constant communication is really important. So when you're starting on the day, you know, you'll quickly know once you've done taking photos of the groom getting ready or the bride getting ready, you quickly know like kind of the other person's style and what they're about. Yeah. And it's a constant communication and a dance really around each other and making sure that everything is flowing correctly. And then, yeah, onto the ceremony, like reconnecting. Okay, where are you going to be as the bride comes in? Where are you going to be to like catch maybe the groom's expression when he sees the bride for the first time, et cetera? And then, you know, as the ceremony goes on, again, that dance like kind of continues. But hopefully by this point, you're on the same wavelength because you've been communicating. And then when it goes to portraits, again, just like, hey, let's hit this spot up and then let's move on to here. Do you want some time alone? You know, I can like take 5 or 10 and then let's meet back here. And then I'll have like 10 minutes alone with them. Let's head back out for sunset, like another time and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I feel like the really critical parts definitely is the morning, really, because it sets the tone. So I feel like making an effort to connect with the photographer, videographer, et cetera, is like cool. Definitely being really honest about your experience level. If you've never shot at the venue before, or if you haven't actually shot that many weddings, or if you've shot tons of weddings, just be honest. But one of my frustrations sometimes can be where when you get filmmakers or videographers, and I hope I'm not like bashing anyone, I mean this with all love really, but you know, when I get videographers who just say, you know what, oh, we'll just follow you for the whole day, don't worry about it, like we'll just be where you are, and not really taking any kind ownership. Of like initiative, yeah, or ownership when it comes to like portraits. So and then, you know, us telling them where we want them to be and us telling them like, okay, can you like be here or move this or whatever. And they're happy to go along with, you know, what you say. But I feel like, especially for like portraits, it's just bringing your own level of creativity and like taking control and just playing and have fun with it, you know, have fun with the couple is awesome, because then it gives us a chance to like also step back a bit, observe something new, try something new. I absolutely love that. Whereas I've definitely been in a situation whereby I'm taking photos of a couple and I've got them to this like nice, you know, sweet, intimate moment. And then they're like, oh, hey, can we just like cut in now and quickly do this? And it's like, I just built up to get to this energy level. And then that can be a bit frustrating. So that's why I've definitely tried to make it so that we can each have our own time as well and just work together. So
I love that you said that, because we have always, and again, different strokes for different folks, I guess. I mean, every studio is different, but we've always found that telling the photographer, like, especially like, because we don't want a bunch of video. No one wants, I believe true that the client does not want a bunch of video of them being posed for a photo. Like, they're going to take your art and put it on a wall. That's great. I know you're not posing them. I totally know what you're doing. You're getting them to interact. You're getting them to flirt. And you're finding little moments that are happening. But the video does not need to have all of those same shots in it if it's right over the shoulder of the photographer. And I love telling photographers, and other filmmakers need to hear this, because sometimes we believe that when we show up to a job, like, we got to act busy. We got to look busy. I firmly believe that when you get there on a wedding day and the girls are getting ready, you're filming all that, you're taking photos, hang out. Like, just have people know that you're personable and you're likable. Have a conversation with the photographer, because not a lot is necessarily going on. I mean, you're going to get the makeup shots. You're still going to get her hair being done 5 minutes later if you miss this one thing. There's the same stuff is going on. Of course, have your camera ready, but you don't need to just get down to business right as soon as you get there. And I believe that's when the photographer, it does set the tone. Being able to have like connections, like, oh yeah, I've been there before. Like, how was your vacation? That's cool. And the bride will chime in and say, oh, that's awesome. And they feel more comfortable knowing that your photographer and filmmaker are getting along. And by that time during the photo shoot, right, you're having to change lenses. So that's when I can jump in and be like, hey, let me steal you guys for 15 seconds. Because there's really not much I have to get for video. It's quick. So
yeah. So as soon as you start collaborating and working together and just have a good energy about yourself, then things just flow so much more easier and you're not butting heads at any point and stuff. So that's great.
If you could wrap it up, what are three things you see in other filmmakers that would encourage you? Like, why would you refer somebody? What is it that you trust that makes you want to refer a certain filmmaker to your own clients?
Oh, yeah, good question. First thing definitely is, it's just good people, basically. I want people that are passionate, care about their work and their couples and what they do. And I just like fun to be around. Like, I would definitely refer friends that I know are awesome, but behind that, they are, great creatives as well. So people who I've worked with before who are great at creativity, but also I can just jam with on a day and we can have a good time and we then know the couple is going to have a good time. That is like hugely important to me. And then just, having a solid work ethic and being creative on a wedding day as well.
So it's not just about the work necessarily. It's more about connections and personality and professionalism.
100%. I mean, there's people who do amazing work, but I can't really refer them because I know I've worked with them and I know actually how they are like on a wedding day. And unfortunately, that's only just based off of like one interaction and they may have changed. It might have been a bad day for them, et cetera. But I know who I have worked with and consistently, and I've seen them at different weddings in different scenarios and they're just good people and the couple love them. And then they produce like incredible videos and they're the people that I'm going to end up referring, and then like, if they're not available, because these guys who I do refer are really good, they get busy, but they definitely know who I can also refer as well, So when they're unavailable, they have like their go-to guys and I definitely hugely trust who they refer. So that's going to be a big part of who I then send on to a couple as well.
That's good stuff, man. I believe as professionals and good people, and again, there's people that are amazing photographers in my region, but they're not good people. And I don't want to spend an entire wedding day with somebody that is not going to encourage or help me be creative for my clients and be fun to be around. And that's huge. I'm glad you said that, because it is tough to be not only creative, but you have to be likable and you have to be trustworthy and you have to show up and you can't get drunk with the bridesmaids. And it's like, that's real. That stuff happens and it's crazy. But as professionals, we need to know how to maneuver ourselves out of those situations. And if you're not I believe the opposite of that is not being a professional in the sense of flipping out or even having an argument or a conversation with the opposite, whether you're a photographer or a filmmaker, because it is about your client that day. And so you got to roll with the punches. And I believe, I mean, you mentioned, you were telling the story earlier about the documentary, quote unquote, filmmaker that would step in and pose the bride and put her here and do this. And that's not really documentary. You're not being a fly on the wall. I have experienced film photographers that only bring a 35 millimeter lens to a wedding. And so even though I tell them, hey, I'm going to be back here for the ceremony, like they're still 2 feet away for the vows and the kiss, because that's all they know. That's the shot they want to get. And that's what's the most, that means the most to them. So we know that, and we've experienced that. And now as a professional, we know, okay, this photographer is going to do this. Let's have another camera over here so that we can get it. Don't blame the photographer, because it is on you. And don't blame the videographer. Don't blame the filmmaker if they keep doing something new. As professionals, I think we should be able to evolve and be like, all right, cool. Now that I know what's going to happen here, I've got to, you know, do something. And there'll be proof. I mean, if you get in trouble with the bride, or if they're like, why didn't you get this shot? You're going to be able to show, I tried, you know, like I tried my best to make sure we communicated, and that's all we can ask. But not doing it at the wedding is most important. What do you think about that?
I mean, I definitely have a stash. I love shooting with 35s and 24s. I love getting in close, but I'm definitely very aware when there's video there that,
yeah,
you know, yeah, definitely do use longer lenses. I do love that 35 look. So I don't want to also compromise where I'm coming from, but being aware is getting that shot and then knowing you've got it and then moving away. And again, it's like, it is completely a dance. And then you kind of turn over and you take a look at the videographer and just, you know, just make sure you're on the same page and they're getting what they need and you're getting what you need. Obviously, if you've been up front for like quite a while, you get a look of, you know, that's not too happy with what you've been doing, but then you know, like, okay, cool. Like you got too close at that point, or you stay there for too long and just, you know, just like hold back, because hopefully the filmmakers also have, you know, other angles that they're getting and they have like different shots to work with. But yeah, you just, you know, you're not the only creative on the day. So it's just being respectful, aware of what other people are trying to get and then doing your best to get what you're looking for as well, without compromising your own style and look.
Yeah, that's great, man. It's good to hear other photographers believe that they're not the most important person, that there is a job being done by the filmmaker, and the photographer has an equally important job, and there needs to be some teamwork. And so hopefully there's some things that we can all do together to, you know, make our clients happier. And this is kind of why we're talking about this. It's not about egos here. It's about doing the best work you can, but also having the client walk away knowing you guys did dance together and, you know, walked your talk and were professionals and made eye contact. This is all great.
What's your kind of, if I was a photographer and we were going to work together, what would you say to me about what you're looking for on the wedding day so that I can make sure you're getting that? What is your style in terms of documenting the ceremony or documenting the portraits? Like, would you want to have time with a couple alone, or would you?
I like this, man. You're flipping it around on me. You want to do the podcast now? You're going to take over? This is great. No, that's a good question. There's a couple things that I don't think photographers truly understand, and they may take offense to it. For instance, when there's letter readings, you know, when there's gift exchanges and letter readings, I will, of course, talk to the bride before the wedding and say, hey, is there a letter reading? Like, because we have a questionnaire that we send. And if there is, I'll say, hey, so no pressure, and it's fine if you don't want to, but usually makes for great audio if you read it out loud. Is that something that you'd be willing to do? And 95% of the time they say yes. Sometimes they say no, and cool, I'm not going to force that. That's not my job. But if they say yes, I will tell the photographer, like, go ahead and get your shot. But then after she's opened the letter and read it to herself, I would like to get her reading it out loud. Well, the thing about photography is you got these clicks, and especially the spray, you know, if you're like getting a bunch of photos every second and just going, you know, click, 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 click. You hear that stuff on the video. And so that's the only reason why I would say, and I've learned my lesson, and I've learned to better educate photographers and say, I just want her to read it out loud after you get your shot so I can get my shot with great audio. And that's something I think goes over the heads of some photographers, because they're just thinking, oh, she's doing it again. Let me try to get a backup shot. And so that, and then just communicating down the aisle. Of course, if the photographer walks down the aisle as a professional, I guess I'll go down there too. I just don't like to do it. I got a 70 to 200 in the back for the kiss. That's what I'm doing. I know that that's going to happen. I've told them, but then they creep in and they've ruined that shot. So I got to do what I have to do. But the shot's not ruined if you stay on one side. If a photographer creeps down the left or the right of the aisle, shoot, we can still get a shot. You frame them out. That's what professionals do. That's what you do, I'm sure, when you have someone in your way in the photos, you can frame them out sometimes.
Yeah, I actually usually ask the videographer, you know, what is your plan, you know, when they're announced as, you know, husband and wife, and then they kind of kiss and then walk down the aisle. Do you walk with them? Do you shoot from the back, or, you know, right, where are you? And sometimes you get it where they're like, well, yeah, we're going to follow them out. So then I would say, okay, cool, let's just stand side by side. And
yep. But you would never know that if you didn't take the time to ask beforehand. So
yeah. And it usually is something that pops into my head, like right before the ceremony. I'm like, okay, what's going to happen when this ends? Let's quickly just like run through that. And then, yeah. And then you just know where you're going to be and be at the right place at the right time. And
it's funny. You get photographers and filmmakers that are like, yeah, what do you want? What do you think? What do you want to do? Those are great. But even if you get a photographer, you know, because I'm coming from the filmmaker side. If you get a photographer that says and puts their foot down that says, I always walked down the aisle with him. Well, cool. You can't really have an argument about that. So, all right, just so evolve, you know, and still find a way as a creative to get a different kind of shot than you would from another wedding. Say you don't walk down the aisle with them. Say you shoot from the back. Great. Well, guess what? You're going to have a photographer in your shot because they've already told you what they're doing. So figure it out so that you don't get frustrated. Otherwise, yep, you're going to be like, why is that photographer in my shot? Like, and that's just going to create a snowball of problems. So communication is definitely key. And even if somebody else has an ego, that doesn't mean you need to start having your own ego. I think that's a slippery slope. When you start getting angry or mad, just make a game out of it. It's all for your client. And if there's a way for you to still do your job, you're going to find a way to do it.
Definitely.
Well, we cannot film weddings forever. We will eventually get old and we will not be able to relate to these awesome families and couples. And man, every time I do a wedding, it's like my back is killing me. It's crazy. And I'm not that old. I don't think I'm that old, at least 34. So I still have some time, but I don't want to be filming weddings every weekend, all the time, forever. How have you started positioning yourself as a creative to maybe think of new revenue streams or ways that you don't have to put all of your eggs in one basket?
Yeah, sure. It's something that I definitely, you know, coming from a finance background and having a, you know, a job where I knew that it's definitely like more stability, and this definitely is on my mind. But at the same time, as you know, just on a health tip, I started feeling, you know, my legs and my feet were hurting a lot, back as well. And I've just started to exercise a lot more because I definitely want to have as much longevity in this field as possible. Mm-hmm. If I'm not as relevant and I don't have the like artistic flair or things just completely change, that's a different story. But definitely health and fitness is like a huge thing for me. And I'm trying my best to just stay fit in body and mind as much as possible. But in terms of other revenue streams, you know, I'm really passionate about education and community. And I actually recently started an interview website whereby I interview other creatives about their, you know, passions and interests and their creativity. And that manifested in the form of a conference that started last year in October in Vancouver. And I want that to be an annual thing and continue. So besides weddings, I'm also trying to earn, I guess, revenue in other areas. And it's definitely very tough. There are many conferences and education platforms online and in person. But I'm passionate about it. And I'm going to also look at other avenues as well. As I mentioned, you know, I love street photography and I love portraits, and maybe there's a future in doing some more documentary portraiture for local businesses and companies. But at the moment, my focus is definitely on longevity within weddings and this educational platform.
What is the conference about? What's it called? And why would someone want to attend this conference, and who's it for?
Sure. So the conference is called The Experience. It's from the interview website ARC. And yeah, it's an annual conference in Vancouver, BC. It's predominantly for wedding and portrait photographers. It's a three-day event that happens in October. And what we want to do is basically build community, facilitate creativity, and get photographers from the wedding and portrait industry, but also get photographers from other industries as well. So last year we had a street photographer, a commercial, a fashion and a fine art photographer, and a videographer as well. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with The Shark Pig from California, but he, Brian Morrow is an incredible filmmaker and creative. And so he came out and he was actually our closing presenter last year and now is coming back this year as our host because he's just an incredible human and creative. So really excited to have him back. But yeah, so it's a three-day event. We have food trucks for lunch. We have like cocktail networking evening the first night. the last night we have a huge party, and then before it even kicks off we have masterclasses. So with every single speaker that we have, they would also do a half day or a full day masterclass, whereby they would be with some of the attendees in more smaller intimate environments. So it'd be maximum of 10 to 15 people. And then you just get like hands-on learning from these keynote presenters.
That's awesome, man. And it's at ARC. So your interview site is ARC, A-R-C?
The interview website is ARC. The website is www.thisisarc.co.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out. That's awesome.
Yeah, thanks, man. And then, besides the keynotes, we have mini presenters as well. We actually allow the audience to present if they've got something that they want to share and are passionate about. So yeah, it's an awesome 3 days and 4 days, really. And yeah, so really, really excited about that and building the interview website and building the conference and community as time goes on.
It's awesome, man. Keep it going, because you definitely can tell there's a passion for education for you, and it's always good to have different creative outlets. Because it makes you better for your own craft, that you're still, with the wedding side. I mean, being able to collaborate with other creatives is something that gets me going a lot. And that's why we've created Studio Sherpas as well, because I've met some awesome people that I never would have met to begin with and can learn from them. I learn from everybody else that comes on this podcast. That's selfishly why I'm doing it. I'm just kidding, but not really.
Not me, actually. I mean, that's honestly why I started off the interview website. I wanted it to turn into a conference, but you can't just stick on a 3-day conference out of nowhere. You have to build a brand, and you have to, have a strategy in place and plan it out. So, but I have photographers who are incredible creatives and friends, and have access to these guys. So I, ask a few people, hey, do you want to be part of this interview website that I'm creating? And thankfully, a good bunch of them said yes, and then it just started and just rolled. And I'm a firm believer in doing things that you're passionate about, that you would essentially do for free. And then if there is a business angle from it later, then great. But first and foremost, you should do what you're passionate about and what excites you. So, and then you're never really going to go wrong in life, I think. So.
Good stuff, man. Well, thanks for being on the podcast. I've learned a ton, especially from the photography side of things. And all of us need to do a better job of being equals and putting egos aside and doing things for our clients and becoming friends. Like, don't be territorial with our work, because there's plenty of creative space to do what you are hired to do. As long as you communicate too, it's all about communication. So I appreciated the candidness and the realness of our conversation today, and keep doing some awesome work. If you guys want to go follow his work, he's on Instagram, Sachin Kona, and sachinkona.com.
Yes, correct. Yep.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being on, bud. And look forward to following you and seeing what you're going to do next.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Matt. I really appreciate the opportunity to share and collaborate and connect through your podcast, and yeah, wish you guys all the best.
See, I told you guys, that was an amazing, eye-opening conversation that I think needs to happen way more often in your prospective markets. So start those conversations, be proactive, be a team player. Don't let your ego get in the way of doing an amazing job for your client, and also having fun with other creatives that are hired to do their job as well. Hopefully you guys got some gold nuggets from this. Let us know, email us at hey@studiosherpas.com. I would love to know just a few things that you might start doing differently that have been frustrating to you, whether you need to be proactive or reach out to some other people and become a team more often than not. Let us know what you plan on doing to just open up the lines of communication and enjoy creating instead of fighting and butting heads with other creatives that are just doing their job as well. We would love to hear that from you. Again, we have our course that's open, Selling Like a Sherpa. If you are a creative that is terrified of sales and terrified of talking with people and talking budgets and thinking that your work is just going to sell itself, we would love for you to jump into this course. It's gotten some rave reviews so far, and we're opening it back up without the live training. So it's a different price point. So for those of you that were maybe waiting until you had the funds, this is a great investment. And you can, of course, hear more about it at studiosherpas.com. We also have some wedding tools and sales templates and contracts and emails and workflows and all that stuff. If you are just kind of floating on by with how you run your wedding business, we've got some tools on the website store you guys can dive into and take advantage of if you don't have those systems in place. This is Matt Davis signing off. See you next time.